We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Wednesday, January 15th, and the confirmation hearings for Donald Trump's nominees are well underway in Washington, D.C. We will get to that. But first, off the top of the show, the Trump mandate, of course, is to secure the border, among other things, and actually do the business of government efficiency and to actually carry out the obligations of governing that voters overwhelmingly want. And it's very clear, and everybody's been talking about the Trump mandate, and how that affects the states in terms of actually implementing that is also a serious question, because this isn't just about the federal government. This is also about the states working, not hand in hand exactly, but doing their state level obligations. And to that end, Governor Ron DeSantis of my home state of Florida issued a proclamation yesterday calling for a special session of the Florida legislature to convene on January 27th to address the following issues. This is coming from his note to the press: combating illegal immigration, condominium regulation, agricultural relief in response to national disasters, replenishing the My Safe Florida Home program, and the Citizens Initiative petition process. So making sure that we don't pass anything like amendments 3 and 4 that thankfully failed, and in no small part thanks to our listening audience in Florida who helped to vote those down, the terrible abortion amendment, as well as the terrible marijuana amendment that would have done really bad things for the state. So instead of waiting until March, Governor DeSantis is saying we've got to get started and actually do the business of governing. So called a special session. And this is what he had to say about the state's role in helping the Trump administration secure the border. This is cut 3.
Well, good morning. We have worked very hard over the last 4 years to overcome a lot of obstacles that the federal government has put in our way across a wide variety of issues. As they've borrowed and spent and driven costs up higher, we've acted to reduce burdens on Floridians, whether it's tax relief, toll relief, you name it. As they tried to throw roadblocks into education freedom, we worked hard and we overcame it. And of course, the issue that was maybe the most significant over the last 4 years, the fight against illegal immigration, as the Biden administration was allowing our borders to be overrun, have millions and millions of people come into the country illegally. Florida led the way in enacting strong policies to deter and discourage and hold accountable people that came to this country illegally. We are now coming up on the next presidential inauguration. And when President Trump takes office again on January 20th, we are going to see a sea change in policies, particularly with respect to the border and illegal immigration. And this is an issue that has been festering in this country for many, many decades, although the first Trump administration was much more successful than others have been. This is the time to get it right once and for all.
So then Politico, in response to this call for a special session, kind of gleefully posted, boom, hours after Governor Ron DeSantis announces plan for a special session, the Senate, and this is in Florida, Florida Senate President Ben Albritton and House Speaker Daniel Perez respond. They call the special session talk premature, and that the topics can be handled in March. So Florida State Senator Blaze Ingaglia posted this in response. Respectfully, I disagree. These four statewide issues outlined by Governor DeSantis are pressing and time sensitive. The sooner we tackle these issues, the better. Florida should always lead from the front, especially on illegal immigration issues. So Senator Blaze Ingaglia joins us now. So good morning, Senator. And thank you so much for coming on today. And I think it's incredibly important, as Governor DeSantis clearly does, and even Trump posted, that more governors should be like Governor DeSantis and lead the way, that a special session, Florida should get to work on this.
Yeah, and good morning, Jenna. And Jenna, it's not Senator, it's just Blaze. Just call me Blaze. I would appreciate that. This is important. And what amazes me is people out there, did they not think that the governor had a conversation with the president, President Trump, on these issues? Here's the fact of the matter. The fact of the matter is that next week we are going to inaugurate President Trump, and we already know that he's going to be issuing executive orders to carry out one of his main missions, which is combating illegal immigration and deporting. Now, we cannot simply wait until a March-April special session so a law will go into effect, you know, maybe April at the earliest, or possibly May or June. We need to assist them now. And I would hate to think that on the issue where we have led before, passing the law of the Senate Bill 1718, which I wrote, co-authored, sponsored, and passed into law, which is the largest state-led anti-illegal immigration bill that the United States has ever seen, that all of a sudden we're going to sit back and we're not going to lead on this issue. I do not want to be put in a situation where the president is ready for deportations, but the states are not. Florida has always led on these issues. Ron DeSantis has always led on this issue. And we shouldn't be debating this. At this point, it should be pedal to the metal to fulfill the mandate by the people on this president.
And that makes so much sense, because if the session didn't begin until March, then you're not looking at legislation until a couple of months beyond that. So even starting January 27th, things need to happen very quickly. So why would the Florida Senate president and the Speaker of the House be opposed to this?
I don't know. I don't know, but I disagree with it. Now, granted, Jenna, I am probably more aggressive as a legislator than most. I think it's one of the reasons why I get along so well with Governor DeSantis. But one of the things that I'm concerned is that we see all these tragic stories on news every day where you had an illegal immigrant who was in custody, then gets released and then commits a heinous crime, a rape or a murder. And all of that is on the Biden administration right now. Everyone is blaming Biden and the failed policies of the last 4 years. But now it's on us. Could you imagine if we didn't call a special session and we had an illegal immigrant in our custody, but we had to release him because ICE didn't do their job for whatever reason, because we have to release him after 72 hours. And then all of a sudden they now got on the streets and they committed a heinous crime in the state of Florida. It would be on us because we didn't do what we were supposed to do, would help Trump carry out his plan to deport a lot of these illegal immigrants. So the governor has a great plan. I've seen the plan. I've given input on the plan. These stories where, you know, no one has seen the plan, it's not true. I mean, we've been talking about this for the last 6 months. We do not go into and Jenny, you know this, we don't go into a legislative session, all of a sudden we just come up with bill ideas during committee weeks. No, we're thinking about this stuff all year round. And so we've had ideas of what we wanted to do to assist in the Trump administration the whole time. But now isn't the time to debate whether to have a special session. Now is the time to drill down, pedal to the metal, and get it done.
Yeah, and that's such a great point as well, that, you know, this isn't like Schoolhouse Rock where, you know, people just had come up with random bill ideas and it's sort of slow moving progress and all of these things. There is a plan, and I love Blaze that you and Governor DeSantis are fighters, that you're aggressive, that Governor DeSantis has said he's willing to even fire people who don't do their job in the executive branch. This is what the Florida supermajority is supposed to do, which is to protect Floridians and carry out that overarching mandate for specifically the state of Florida, and other red states should follow. I mean, Florida really is the blueprint. So speaking about that plan, and in the first even month of the session, or even the first week, what is the expectation that you can disclose that that will be the priorities in terms of legislation?
For illegal immigration specifically?
That and any other issue that that's been discussed. Because the governor, of course, mentioned a few in his press release.
Yeah, illegal immigration is going to be probably one of the big issues that we're going to tackle. And the governor has outlined this, you know, making a 287G program for the sheriffs and jails so they can work in conjunction with the federal government for deportations. We are going to a proposal for illegal immigration, which you may see the governor roll out today, is we are going to pass Senate Bill 4, Texas bill that they passed with the law, which has been challenged in the courts, that allows us to hold illegal immigrants and create a rebuttable presumption that they're going to flee, so we don't offer them bail, so we can hold them. So that's a lot of the stuff we're going to see for illegal immigration. As far as the legislative session is concerned, my big issue right now is the housing crisis, right? And a lot of that is done by insurance and property taxes. So I'm going to be offering an additional homestead exemption for people to help bring them down their property taxes. And I'm going to offer some out-of-the-box solutions so we can make Florida's coastline homes more resilient. And by giving people property tax breaks to harden their homes so they're safer during hurricanes, which then will bring down the overall cost of the hurricanes, which bring down the losses, which will bring down everyone's home insurance premiums. So that's one of the big things I'm focusing on. I'm the chair of banking and insurance. So that's on the top of my list to do this year.
And I know every Floridian listening is very grateful for that. And this is why the state legislature is so important. There's so much focus and national attention on Congress and Trump and the federal government. But really, the day-to-day that affects citizens probably the most comes down to the priorities in the states. And that's frankly why I moved to Florida, is exactly for senators like you, for our Governor DeSantis, for the priorities that the state legislature has in Florida that I wasn't experiencing in Colorado, and certainly with the Democrats that are just out of control there, like what we're seeing in California. So Florida has it together, and we're very grateful for that. And so what about the citizens initiative petition process? I know that, you know, with the 60% threshold, that's the only reason that Amendments 3 and 4, which would have been devastating to the state, did not pass. What is the thought in terms of recontemplating or perhaps strengthening that process?
I'm sorry, I cut out for a second. What process? Which process?
I'm sorry, the citizens initiative process and that 60% threshold.
Yeah, so we've seen some fraud out there, specifically with Amendment 3. And we need to safeguard, because what's happening right now is communities are so interconnected and corporations have become so large and powerful that they are now basically buying the ballot. They are bypassing the legislature. And we've seen that specifically with the marijuana amendment. They put the marijuana amendment on the ballot that basically gave them immunity, that said that you couldn't grow it. It wasn't about choice, whether you wanted to smoke marijuana or not. It was about one corporation trying to control the market and make a lot of money. So I think we need to safeguard against that, because fraud does happen. Another thing, Jenna, that nobody talks about is that it's becoming easier and easier, believe it or not, to get a lot of these petitions signed because of the way our Constitution is written. Now, I'm not saying that there's going to be any changes, but you have to get petitions signed per congressional district. And what happens is that these petition gatherers park themselves in Miami-Dade and Broward County and in Orange County, where all these congressional districts converge, and they basically circle around in a 20-mile circle and get a lot of these petitions. So specifically with the marijuana amendment, they didn't leave us. So just so everyone knows, when a constitutional amendment is passed, there's usually an implementing bill so we can fill the gaps of what people who did the constitutional amendment forgot. There was no way for us to regulate medical marijuana, so it would have been on the streets anywhere at any time. So we need a process where we can fill in the gaps. People are fully informed about what they're voting on, no catchy slogans. And when they're in the ballot box, they fully understand the issue that they're voting on. And we don't have that clarity right now. We have, quite frankly, some shysters that are gaming the process And we need some reform to protect what we've what we have here in the state of Florida.
Yeah, that is so important, and such a, an important point on Amendment 3, that there was no implementing legislation, and that this is a way for these big corporations to circumvent the legislature and then not leave any good options in terms of protections that are missed when you go through a constitutional process, which, as the governor mentioned, is so much more difficult to then take care of later, because then it's part of the Constitution rather than legislation. So that's something that I know our listeners would love to see strengthened and change. So Senator Blaise Ngaglia, really appreciate it this morning. And you can follow him on X at one of my favorite handles that I've ever seen, which is at Gov Gone Wild. So Blaise, thanks so much. We'll look forward to having you on again soon. And good luck in Tallahassee. Starting on the 27th, we will be praying for your and everyone's time there. And we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. This Sanctity of Life Month, we honor the over 66 million babies whose lives have been tragically ended through abortion since Roe versus Wade. Sadly, with the abortion pill accounting for over 60% of all abortions, babies' lives are at even greater risk now. But in the midst of this darkness, there is a light that shines, and that's Preborn. Preborn's network of clinics have rescued over 300,000 babies from abortion and have prayed with over 80,000 women to come to Christ.
When I heard her heartbeat, I decided to keep her. And now my daughter's about to be three. I don't know where my life would be without her.
An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. This is Jenna Ellis asking you to join Preborn in protecting life. One ultrasound session costs $28, and $140 will sponsor five ultrasounds. Any gift will help, $100, $200, even $1,000. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, Congress is also getting underway, prioritizing the Trump mandate, and the House yesterday voted to protect the integrity of female sports, but only two Democrats voted in defense of women. Probably the rest of them can't define what a woman is, so maybe they need to go back to, you know, kindergarten, where we all learned that before they vote. But this coming from hot air, Democrats talk a big game about protecting and valuing women. But when the rubber meets the road, almost all of them voted today to let men beat up women on the playing field. The House of Representatives held a vote on the, quote, Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act of 2025, unquote, and only two Democrats bucked the pressure of their party leaders and activists to lay down a marker beyond which the ideologues could not go. So let's welcome in Gerard Folletti, who is senior counsel for the Lawfare Project. And Gerard, you know, this seems like this type of LGBTQ nonsense and all of that, there are going to be some battle lines drawn definitely for this Congress and moving forward into 2025. And thankfully, it seems like at least the Republicans are on the correct side of this issue.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me. I think the Republicans are on the correct side of the issue. That goes without saying. But what's really surprising is the pushback that they're getting from Democrats, who, especially those who live in districts where they know that this is an issue for their constituents, the districts that Donald Trump won heartily. And this is going to plague them at the ballot box if they continue to be obstructing bills like this and insisting on these woke definitions of gender that actually harm women.
Yeah. And I mean, and this is something that a lot of the states have contemplated. And, you know, we saw some of the controversy specifically in South Dakota with Governor Kristi Noem, who vetoed the Alliance Defending Freedom kind of model legislation, saying that, oh, it needs to go and be amended first and all that. And she got a lot of pushback for that. But a lot of the red states have passed that. What are the implications of Congress if they end up passing this bill and it goes to then President Trump for signature?
I think the implications of it will encourage states to mirror this with regard to state law. I mean, this federal act bill, which I think we will see pass the Senate and end up signed by Donald Trump, is one of the first things that he signs. This will cut federal funding to programs that continue to put a burden and destroy the ability of women and girls to participate in sports because of you know, gender disparity by allowing men to play those sports. So cutting federal funding is a first step, but states also have a large role in this. So I think we will see mirror legislation being passed increasingly by states who are emboldened in seeing that this is something that people want. This is something that voters want. This is something that parents want. So we will see more of these bills passing at the state level as well, and we will switch the discussion from the federal level to the local one. Why schools are not enforcing this, why schools are or are not engaging in these political discussions instead of protecting girls.
Yeah, and so are there things that are necessary to change or modify on the federal level in terms of, you know, some of, the funding, for example, that comes from the Department of Education currently over some of these things? I mean, is this kind of where the federal government is focusing so it can make it easier on the states?
This is where the federal government is focusing because a large amount of the money that goes into sports does come from Title IX grants. It does come from federal funding, even at the K-12 level. So by passing this bill, you're empowering the Department of Education, which I hate to say it, we still need it, to cut funding when schools or when programs violate this law and allow men to participate in girls' sports. And that's what really the next step is the enforcement mechanism. It's people filing those complaints and getting the Department of Education to cut funding when the law is violated.
Yeah, and you know, and this seems like in 2025 we should be focused on you know, a lot more not important things, but like non-basic things like protecting women in women's sports. I mean, to even have this as a controversy, I think shows the fundamental worldview and ideologue issue that is just a huge disparity between the left and the right. And we saw in November of 2024, not only on the federal level with the trifecta, but also even on the state level with the ousting of, you know, a lot of Republicans in name only, and you know, even in a lot of the extreme Democrats, even on the state level in some states, that this is being just roundly rejected from a cultural standpoint. What do you think the implications of that are?
Well, the implications of that are that we will see increasingly a shift towards local rule, parents who want control of what's going on in their schools. It's not just about gender. It's about other woke and progressive ideologies being shoved down children's throats without parents' consent, and one that most Americans don't want, regardless of how they vote. That's the irony here, that this has become polarized, even though it's a unifying issue. We have parents who are otherwise liberal on a lot of policies who are supportive of bills that protect girls in sports, that are supportive of bills that give parents the ability to be more conservative in what's taught to their kids. So this is really where the disconnect is. At the local level, we see a lot of support for these initiatives, but it's the chattering class of progressives at the national level who pretend that this is a problem and make this an issue. Right now, we only had a handful of Democrats voting for this bill. They're going to pay for it in the next election because they can get away with not supporting it now when they know that the Republicans have the vote to get it into law and they have a president to sign it. But by the next election, they'll be paying the consequences. They'll be voted out of office.
And I'm speaking with Gerard Folletti, who is the senior counsel of the Lawfare Project. And that's such a great point, that parents and families want more options. They want school choice, for example. And it's the elites and the teachers unions and the people who historically have been in control of these things that are pushing back against that instead of doing what President Trump said from the very beginning in 2015, is to give more freedom back to Americans and to deregulate a lot of these things so that we have more choice. So hopefully that is going to be a huge thing that actually gets accomplished, not just through the federal government and some of these things, but then also, of course, as you mentioned, in the states. And again, this is why state legislatures are incredibly, incredibly important. And we need to be paying attention, not just what goes on at the federal government level, but also the states. But let's turn to Congress and the confirmation hearings that began yesterday in Washington. Of course, the key attention, Gerard, was paid to Pete Hegseth and his nomination for Secretary of Defense. And I think he acquitted himself well. He was clearly prepared. And this was one of my favorite exchanges from Senator Warren trying to Pocahontas, as she's called by some, trying to just trip him up. And you can just hear the audience laughing, knowing that she's been had for just trying to create a mess of things. This is cut four.
You're quite sure that every general who serves should not go directly into the defense industry for 10 years. You're not willing to make that same pledge?
I'm not a general, Senator.
And then everybody just starts laughing. I mean, but I think he did incredibly well. But then there was one or two moments, and at least and I didn't watch the entire proceeding, but especially a couple of clips where again it's Democrats that are trying to trip him up a little bit. But this was Senator Duckworth asking Hegseth on ASEAN, which is of course not a Department of Defense organization, but clearly he wasn't as prepared for some of these other economic organizations and some of these treaties between countries. So listen to this exchange, cut five.
You could do acquisition and cross-servicing agreements, which essentially are security agreements. You can't even mention that. You've done none of those. You talked about the Indo-Pacific a little bit, and I'm glad that you mentioned it. Can you name the importance of at least one of the nations in the ASEAN and what type of agreement we have with at least one of those nations? And how many nations are in ASEAN, by the way?
I couldn't tell you the exact amount of nations in that, but I know we have allies in South Korea and Japan and in AUKUS with Australia, trying to work on submarines with them.
Mr. Hegseth, none of those countries are in ASEAN.
We have allies across.
None of those three countries that you've mentioned are in ASEAN. I suggest you do a little homework before you prepare for these types of negotiations. Listen.
All right, so that clip kind of went viral. And, for those who aren't aware, the ASEAN is the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. It's one of the economic and political alliances, things like the European Union, the African Union, et cetera. Gerard, so, that clip, there was a wide variety of commentary. And, from my perspective, even though that's not specifically a military alliance, isn't it important for somebody who's coming in as the Secretary of Defense potentially to know just some of those basic, key economic and political alliances as well? Or how did you view this?
Well, I think it is important to have a good sense of what these alliances are. And I think that he does. The issue ultimately is that when you are the chief executive, when you are a secretary of a cabinet, I don't think that there's the expectation that you micromanage everything and you know every single detail about everything in your department. That's not your role as a CEO. Your role is to get good advice and information and make challenging decisions in the best way possible. I think that if anyone is asked what the countries are or if there's an issue that comes up, he will have that information at his fingertips within a few minutes. The issue is how he acts on that information, what he does with it. It's the character of the person and their ability and their judgment under pressure. It's not knowing every single fact in the world, because let's face it, all of us in our professions can't keep track of everything. So I don't see this as disqualifying. I see this as he was responding to a gotcha question. Now, let's face it, there are a lot of alliances. There are a lot of acronyms. It's very hard even for people who've been doing this for a lifetime to keep track of everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And I completely agree with you that it's absolutely not disqualifying. This is the reason that, even like lawyers, and I've certainly done this in courtrooms before, telling a judge, I'll brief you on that later, because you don't necessarily have a response to a specific question or on, some other isolated issue. And that's where you go and you do your research and then you come back and you present it. So, to me, this wasn't disqualifying, but it also showed, I think, a little bit of a lack of preparation of perhaps some of these overarching kind of gotcha questions, because what Duckworth was attempting to do, I think, was point out that that Hegseth doesn't have a good grasp on some of these things. And where my concern is, I think, is that what we saw in the first Trump administration is that because he was coming into government, especially in that role, without kind of a fuller grasp on all of the various departments and so forth, like, you know, like more like a governor would have a better grasp on, then he had some people in his administration who were able to take advantage of that and not bring those issues to him and basically just make decisions without his knowledge or sign off. And I think that's kind of the risk here. So as Hegseth and others, you know, continue their confirmation hearings, I think he's going to get confirmed regardless, and he should. But, you know, does this to you signal at all, you know, maybe a lack of preparation on the team's part helping him in this type of a hearing?
It absolutely could signal a lack of preparation. But the other part of this is they were preparing for very contentious questions, which he received about his personal life, about allegations that have made all the news. And when you're spending your time focusing on the BS, it's sometimes hard to also focus on the important things. This is not to give him a pass. I think it's important for him to be better prepared. And I anticipate that in the future he will be, because in the future he doesn't have to respond to personal attacks about something that happened years ago in order to be confirmed for something. He would be the sitting secretary. He would have that authority, and he would have the time and ability to focus on the important things and not on trivial.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. Gerard Folletti, who's my special guest this morning, who is the senior counsel of the Lawfare Project. And I do think on those issues and those questions about his personal life and, you know, some of these nonsensical anonymous allegations and all that, he definitely acquitted himself well. And of course, some of the Democrat senators came out of that as if they were open-minded, you know, to say, oh, well, based on his answers, I'm definitely a no vote. And it's like, you weren't going to be a yes vote to begin with. Like, nobody is buying your shtick. But overall, we've seen some, like Senator Joni Ernst, who initially had some hesitations, has come out and said that she will be a yes vote. So I do think he will get confirmed. Are you concerned at all about anyone else so far that is going into hearings this week, which would be everybody other than RFK Jr. and then, of course, Chavez Dreamer for Labor Secretary, those who have not been scheduled yet? Are you concerned about anyone else potentially not passing out of committee or the floor vote for confirmation?
Well, the only other name that comes to mind is Tulsi Gabbard. There have been a lot of questions that have been raised about her qualifications as well, her loyalty, which should not be questioned. And at the end of the day, she has been a little bit inconsistent on the enforcement of some laws about privacy rights in terms of eavesdropping and government surveillance. I think those will be hard questions that will be asked, and I do anticipate she will be prepared for them. That is probably the other challenging nomination, apart from RFK Jr., that has yet to be heard. But again, Donald Trump has made the rounds. There's a reason that Hegseth was the first hearing. You usually have the more contentious ones up front, the ones that you're more concerned about. And I think that there is less concern, especially because Trump made the rounds and did talk to senators over the weekend and earlier to get their commitment to his nominations. I'm not concerned overly that any of them will fail to make it out of committee or even get the votes.
Yeah, and nor should they, because as we've talked about on this program, with the Trump mandate, he should get his cabinet picks, whether, you know, you or I or anybody else think that maybe he should have made a different pick or, you know, we're not quite as excited about some of them. I do think that he should get his selections. He's coming in for a second term with that broad mandate. But our next guest does have some concerns over some of these cabinet picks that you're not going to want to miss. So, Gerard Folletti, thanks so much. And we'll be talking more about some of the resumes of some of these picks when we come back right after this.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we're continuing to talk about the nominees that are set for confirmation hearings this week and in the future for Trump. And, you know, a lot of us are very excited, and I think that Trump should get his picks, but we also need to be aware of the nominees and some potential pitfalls. And, you know, it's also happened that some of the initial nominees have then either withdrawn themselves, like Matt Gaetz, most notably, you know, or others, that their nominations have been withdrawn because the public sentiment has had concerns. And this is part of holding government responsible. So one of those individuals who is holding government responsible is Noel Fritch, who is a Christian, a husband, and a dad to six. He emphasizes six boys, 11 and under, so it is amazing he actually gets any work done, but he's a publisher of National File and also finds time to consult candidates as a true America First Tea Party conservative and Republican campaign advisor. So I emphasize his biography because, you know, this is not about being a Never Trumper or just somebody who is pushing back, but someone who I think truly has the same interests and focus for America First and the Christian worldview as our listeners. So we will welcome him in now. And Noel, good morning. And what concerns you about some nominees in particular?
Hey, Jenna, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. So we've it's been a high couple of months since the big win on November 5th, right? There's no question that America is looking for, you know, a watershed, you know, sea change kind of moment to put the Biden years behind us. And as soon as that happened, of course, the zone has been flooded by all of this noise, all of this nonsense out there in the info space. And so over at National File, we've been focusing, trying to keep a laser focus on these nominees. And so there's a long list, sadly, of swamp infiltration of the Trump transition over the last couple of months. A lot of it is being led, of course, by the Mitch McConnell swamp creatures. There's a lot of, as you'll know, Jenna, Ohio sort of infiltration that's coming from the days of yore with Boehner and Kasich. Those guys are still hanging around. Of course, the Kentucky swamp. And so, and it actually started off really quickly with, you know, your vote for majority leader. So it's important that we don't look at this transition and nomination process in a total vacuum. We've got to look at it in its totality with the vote for John Thune that happened in total darkness. Okay, there was a secret ballot vote for the head of your Senate that happened 12 days ago on Friday, the 3rd of January. Mike Johnson, of course, reintroduced Nancy Pelosi's House rules. Nancy Pelosi, of course, infamously, maybe some people don't know this, maybe some listeners will know this, she got rid of the one vote motion to vacate. Now, she had five votes to vacate, and actually Paul Ryan kept those Nancy Pelosi rules. We actually got rid of them. We went back to one vote. And so it's important that we look at this all in a totality style ecosystem here. But with Mitch McConnell and Elaine Chao, these folks are helping to run this transition. And so from Scott Bessent at Treasury, Scott Bessent is now you're going to be the Secretary of the Treasury. This man is an openly homosexual. He was George Soros's top investor. He was the chief investment officer for George Soros. That's who's going to head up your Treasury. It's unbelievable. And folks just aren't talking about this stuff in conservative press because there is a very proactive effort, Jenna, to mislead our good conservative folks, the great Americans that, you know, are going to work every day and raising their kids, and they're being largely really kind of hoodwinked with a diversionary operation, and that starts at the top of X with guys like Elon Musk. We're talking about everything. If you everybody will remember back to the past couple of months, we're talking about everything except for the nomination process. And then when we do talk about the nomination process, there's really a heavy push for just rah-rah, give Trump whatever he wants. Why is that exactly what we want? And look, I'm an America First guy. I want a total immigration moratorium. But on Christmas Day, what does Elon Musk do? He kicks off a big fight on Christmas Day. And he, a big, you know, the wrong finger in the middle of the faces of the American people. And he says, yeah, you guys are all a bunch of jerks, and we need to replace you. That's why we have to have H-1B. And I know you were probably watching that, Jenna.
And I was with my popcorn. And it's been very interesting to see that in the last 10 days, Vivek Ramaswamy, who actually instigated that fight online, and then Elon responded. And I was actually kind of bummed that my show was on a break over the Christmas holiday because I couldn't talk about it. I could only watch it with popcorn. But that Vivek hasn't posted on X anything in 10 days, and kind of wondering, and I'm hearing, you know, just some rumblings from Trump world that he may be a little bit sidelined because that was just such an unnecessary fight. And then, of course, Trump had to come out and make his position. And then, of course, MAGA fell in line. But the bigger observation from this whole conversation, I think, Noel, is spot on that as much as, you know, I'm one of them who's saying, you know, rah, rah, Trump needs to get his picks. The emphasis is Trump needs to pick. And when you have a lot of these people in the background, the rhinos that actually were part of waylaying Trump's first term, when they're still getting a voice, that is concerning. And the people who are America First need to be asking Trump world, you know, hey, why are they still the ones running the show? Because I thought personnel was going to be better this time.
That's right. And so we've been tracking this very closely over at National File, and it's at National File on X. And we've got a bunch of tweets up, and nationalfile.com, we've got a bunch of stories up about these guys. Elaine Chao, so look, a lot of folks know that there's a lot of bad stuff going on in this country, okay? And this morning I just peeped over at what Elon is saying, and Elon is literally saying, well, life doesn't need to be just about solving the, you know, problems, one problem after another. He literally says that, and then he follows it up with, like, you know, let's go conquer Mars. Well, hey, bucko, back up a minute. How about we try to get a control over what's going on inside of the borders of our own country first? You've got over at National File, just go see what we're talking about, getting control of what's going on inside of our borders. You've got Mitch McConnell and Elaine Chao in charge of the Department of Transportation. Okay, and she's got very close ties to China. Okay, she's a shipping heiress. And, well, what could go wrong with the same globalists who are in charge of global shipping? Okay, imagine supply chains. And imagine, I know a lot of your listeners will be you know, sensitive to a lot of some of the issues that go along with trafficking, okay, human trafficking, labor trafficking, you know, there's all kinds of human trafficking. As everybody knows, it's the morning show. I'm not going to get into it. Drug trafficking. We now know we have terrorists coming into the country, just pouring across the border. How about the ports? And then, you know, for the last couple months, what are we talking about on X? We're talking about drones. UFO was bad branding, so they had to get rid of the UFO term. So now they say UAP, right, as I'm sure you're aware. And so it's a constant diversionary tactic from our quote-unquote betters, our superiors in the conservative ink media scape, Jenna. And it's really important that Christian Americans who are serious about good, well-run civil society stay laser focused on holding folks accountable rather than just rolling over and saying, yeah, you know, just like the first time, Trump's got this. You know what? Paul Ryan and Mike Pence made very sure that Trump did not got this the first time, all of 2017 and 2018. And I hate to say this, but it looks to me like we are ready for getting ready for another repeat of 2017-18 before, you know, the Democrats come in and take charge again.
Yeah, and that is the danger. And while, you know, some may be saying, oh, well, you know, like this is too negative and we need to be more rah-rah and, you know, I really trust Trump. I mean, these are the type of things that we need to call out ahead of time so that we aren't 2 years later and we have another kind of like the first round of when Paul Ryan was speaker and there was so much that was pushed against Trump that he really didn't get as much done as he wanted to. He got a lot done in spite of all of the negativity from his own party. But what's the solution to this then? I mean, when you're pointing out some of these really important concerns, what can the average America First listener actually do to help try to help Trump world circumvent this?
Well, Congress, as you know, has like a 98% win record or something like this. You've got to start holding your particular House reps accountable. And so we've had, if you track the votes for against the Speaker seat is getting harder and harder to hold. That's actually really good news. And I don't want to be a total doomer black pill guy, okay? There is hope. If you track the last decade of Speaker votes, the people are actually getting closer and closer to grabbing control of that House. And that is the answer. We've got to go talk to guys like, you know, Mark Levin about Article 3, Section 1 of the Constitution. Maybe we could get proportional representation back instead of having just 400 U.S. House reps. We should probably have more like 2,000 or 3,000. That would actually help a lot, believe it or not, because as we know, the country is largely and broadly conservative. But the answer is through the Congress. It's through the Congress has to take its authority back. And what Congress has done is they've handed their authority over to the executive over the last, you know, some decades. And, you know, for example, why are we not talking about impeaching any justices in Congress? Well, because we are not demanding that Marjorie Taylor Greene talk about impeaching justices. We need to demand that our, you know, Burchett and all of the, you know, Anna Paulina Luna, Eli Crane, our Freedom Caucus needs to lead. You know, sadly, unfortunately, and I've worked with a bunch of these folks, the Freedom Caucus hasn't done a lot since they gave John Boehner his walking papers. They just haven't. That's a fact. And in fact, members of the Freedom Caucus say that to me. And so we're tracking this very carefully at National File. We are going to be relentless about bringing accountability with all of these members. And so, but we've really got to cut through the noise. You've got to stay laser focused about learning how the machine works. Don't fall prey to the diversionary tactics. That's number one. We've got to learn how these heuristics work, these habits of mind. Okay, if I turn on Hannity again and I hear, oh, but they would crucify him if a Republican did that. I mean, that he's brainwashing his audience into just whining about problems rather than going and fixing them. We've got to start to understand how to cut through the noise, Jenna.
Yeah, and not, as you mentioned, you know, several of the members of the Freedom Caucus, I mean, they're more than willing to go and complain about things on cable television. But when it comes down to actually doing the work and making those difficult decisions, then we don't really see that kind of follow through. I mean, even Anna Paulina Luna here in Florida, I mean, I know I and a number of the conservatives that I'm in touch with and a lot of these groups here in Florida were very disappointed that she didn't make a statement. Clearly against Amendment 4 here in Florida, that ridiculous, outrageous abortion citizens initiative that would be a constitutional amendment just because, you know, she had other priorities and, you know, that's a state issue. I mean, things like that, that for a member of the Freedom Caucus and someone who actually ran on pro-life priorities wasn't willing to just come out and say that and help the governor defeat that. That's a problem. And so some of these things, and I love on your X feed, part of your bio says unsolicited accountability partner to elected officials. I think that should really describe every America First conservative, because while we can champion those who are more on our side and on the side of the Constitution in America than perhaps their opposition, we need to realize that this is our government, and in a self-governing society, the only way that our elected officials don't become tyrants is for us to raise our voice and hold them accountable. And so I appreciate, Noel Fritch, that you are willing to do that, that the National File is willing to do that. And we need to be paying attention throughout, especially the first 100 days, the first 2 years, and make sure that these priorities are really exercised and implemented in ways that are genuinely conservative, not just saying, okay, well, I don't want to go against Trump because, you know, he has this mandate. Well, no, we need to make sure that Trump fulfills the actual mandate that we, the voters, gave him. So accountability is incredibly important. So in just the last 2 minutes I have with you, Noel, what are some of the things, the other things that maybe other than the confirmation hearings and so forth, that people really need to be paying attention to once Trump is inaugurated?
So, again, I think it goes back to the Congress and in the House specifically. We're likely to see more fireworks with Mike Johnson. The fact that Mike Johnson actually doubled down on the motion to vacate, this motion to vacate rule is so critically important. This is Thomas Jefferson's rule. It's been there since forever in the Congress, in the House. And what it means is one member can bring the motion to remove the speaker. And so the way that the House works, the House of Representatives works, is that the members, the speaker basically serves at the pleasure of the members. And that is what basically keeps them honest. That is the mechanism that gives the people the voice in this representative republic. And Mike Johnson literally did away with that. Anybody who's worked in Congress understands that it is basically a tyranny. And so we've really got to focus on getting the power back through the U.S. House of Representatives with that motion to vacate, getting it. You put nine members have to file.
Well said. We got to leave it there. But Noel Fridge, thanks so much. You can follow on X, and you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.